while. This is The Way Phase 4, and I'm your host, Steve Lascalzo. If you haven't watched Season 1, Episode 6 of Loki on Disney+, stop listening now. Seriously, turn this podcast off and go watch the show before you continue. You will be spoiled. I'm not kidding. You have been warned. We talk about everything that happens in the episode and the implications that reach beyond this one show into the Marvel Studios multiverse. The finale, called For All Time Always, became available for streaming in the early morning hours of July 14th, 2021. If you're wondering about how my predictions turned out, not so great. But you see, my thinking was based on a couple of factors, one of which was trusting the word of Jonathan Majors, but that lie changes everything, of course. How silly of me to trust something in a show about Loki, one of the biggest liars, right? Majors appeared in the Loki season finale, and it doesn't matter what he was called in the show, because Kevin Feige already announced him as playing Kang. That's right, Kang has arrived in the Marvel Studio multiverse.
What? What did you say?
If you're dying to tell me how wrong I was, I'd like to remind you, Majors lied. But that's fine. If you want to be part of the podcast, send us your thoughts through social media or email. This is thewayphase4 at gmail.com, @thewayphase4 on Twitter, or facebook.com/thewayphase4. If we get feedback, I will share it. Episode 6 is titled For All Time Always, which we've heard as the motto of the Time Variance Authority way back in episode 1 and several times throughout the series. From first action to last shot before the credits was right about 39 minutes. The mid-credit sequence is really just a short message, so I'm not counting that, but if you missed it, I'll explain that marvelous announcement later in the podcast. The full and brief descriptions for the episode on the selection page both say the same thing. The clock is ticking in the season finale, which finds Loki and Sylvie on a date with destiny. The director for this and all episodes is Kate Herron, writing credit to Michael Waldron, the showrunner, and Eric Martin this week. There's a lot to talk about, so let's head to his office, shall we?
I like it.
There is a previously on segment following the Disney Plus snap. The Marvel Studios fanfare does not play over the Marvel Studios slate, which remains green and gold from episodes 1 all the way to 6. But this time, there's a song, but it's faint. It's actually the song playing at the end of Endgame, where Steve Rogers is dancing with Peggy Carter. There are audio clips playing from Sam Wilson, Hope Van Dyne, The Hulk, King T'Challa, Scott Lang, Natasha Romanoff, Peter Quill, Thor, Steve Rogers, Hank Pym, Carol Danvers, Loki, Korg, Bucky Barnes, Gamora, Stephen Strange, Baron Mordo, Cassilius. It all starts to blend together in what the captions call indistinct overlapping chatter, and that's exactly what it is. Why the voices? Well, I couldn't figure out a pattern to what they were saying, but while the Marvel Studio slate is kind of rotating up and we're seeing the characters, the voices that we hear are matching the characters as we see them inside that word Marvel. There's something interesting, though, because the last voices I could hear that came from Marvel movies all related to Doctor Strange. Then there's real-life clips of famous quotes starting coming out, very interesting zoom out of the galaxies and the universes, and then we start to hear these mixed-in real quotes. And then Richard E. Grant shouts out Glorious Purpose at one point. That was as Loki in the last episode, classic Loki in the last episode. And also the awesome quote from WandaVision where Vision utters, "What is grief but love persevering?" tying it back to an earlier Disney Plus Marvel Studios property. Then Maya Angelou says, "I will rise." And then it goes back to Sylvie telling Loki to open his eyes, also at the end of last episode. Why the order and why the interesting visuals, which seem to end up in a stream of time, circling the Citadel on a very odd-shaped rock with Loki and Sylvie having made it past Alive, I don't know. But After we see them looking up at the building we saw at the end of the last episode, the Loki title sequence appears, and it's a strange sound that plays, not the usual theme music, and we're about to see some weird stuff, so it's appropriate. I don't know if there's a real-world building that the Citadel is based upon. You know, like Disney World's castle and Disneyland's castle are either inspired by or based on castles in the real world. But I couldn't figure out if this Citadel was based on something. But the Lokis make their way up to the front door, which has interesting golden glowing marble lines. It looks like cracks in a pattern that kind of go with the ones that we're going to later see on a watch or a watch tempad that's on the person behind the curtain. Outside the door, Sylvie pauses, expecting Loki to stop her from kicking in the door, but he doesn't stop her. She's hesitant, perhaps not expecting to actually be there at that moment, which doesn't really go with what she tells him when he tries comforting her. She says, she was pruned before he even existed, and I tried making sense of it, and the best I can come up with is that what she means is she was taken from her timeline before he was taken from his. Not actually the pruning part, because that ends up happening in reverse, right? Loki is pruned, and then Sylvie prunes herself. She says she's been waiting for the moment her entire life, and she just needs a moment. The pausing she's doing is kind of weird for her character, unless all of her assuredness has just been an act, which it could be, but then that doesn't make sense later, right? Before she can do any kicking, the door opens. They enter. The door closes behind. They see two hooded statues, some crumbled debris on the ground, and we're looking towards the end of the hallway, and there's a jump scare. Miss Minutes pops into existence, front and center, bright orange smiles. Everyone's straining to look down that hall, right? And then she pops right up in front of the camera. The Lokis draw swords. She calmly welcomes them to the Citadel at the end of time. She congratulates them on their journey and says, he who remains is impressed.
And who is he?
He created all and controls all, she says. At the end, he's all that's left, and he wants to offer them a deal. She's offering wish fulfillment. Each of them getting everything they want, being reinserted into timelines with nothing but happiness and success. Why would he offer it for their surrender? And why, if they surrender, would he end up giving them their wishes? Lokis are liars, so they see through it. Miss Minutes calling the Avengers self-righteous, telling Loki he can have the Infinity Gauntlet, kill Thanos, rule Asgard. Sylvie can go back and have lived a lifetime with her family, remembering nothing but happiness. Apparently, he who remains has been doing creative adjusting and can make it so both Lokis can be alive on the same timeline together.
It's crazy, but he could make it work.
When they tell Miss Minutes they write their own destiny, she tells them good luck with that and disappears. Renslayer is looking through files and sees the rings left on the wood from Mobius not using coasters. She's waiting for something to download on her tempad when we hear Miss Minutes appear. So that's where she went. Renslayer wonders what took her so long, which, if you think about it, is an odd thing to say to a clock that can travel through time and space on its own and appear at any moment. It could have appeared 2 minutes ago, right? Miss Minutes says she's downloading the files she needs. Ravonna says it's not what she asked for, but she's told it's what he thinks will be more useful. She asks who that is, but Miss Minutes disappears again.
Happy reading!
The camera angle for the next scene starts off at 90 degrees with the top, say, at 3 o'clock, and then it rotates counterclockwise to the upright 12 position as the Lokis head deeper into the Citadel, almost like they're going back in time. And there's a faint sound of a grandfather clock ticking, or at least that's what it sounded like to me, as they're walking down some steps into a round room with some statues. 4 statues, but one seems to have been damaged, split toward the bottom of the robes, and then it shattered to pieces on the ground. There's an orrery above the room, or something like it, maybe what's causing the tick-tock sound. It looks as if the statues that are left look the same as those timekeeper robots. At this point, it feels like to me that He Who Remains is actually that fourth statue, right? Loki checks for dust, wonders aloud if He Who Remains is even still alive. A mechanical sound is heard, and they direct their guard toward the back of that room. It's apparently the door to an elevator. The elevator does not have hourglass runes on the door, but instead a square within squares motif, and the door slides back to reveal Jonathan Majors as He Who Remains. The character looks excited and pleased to see them, is wearing a purple cloak, and is holding a green apple.
This is wild.
It sure is, Jonathan. It sure is. If you don't follow Marvel casting announcements, you might have just been surprised to see an ordinary-looking man standing there who you've never seen before or really even heard of, unless you've been picking up on clues that we now see really were clues for Kang and not just Easter eggs. It turns out the showrunners spread those Easter eggs around, and Majors lied about not appearing in the show for the surprise of it all. He said, you know, I don't know what you're talking about when he was asked if he was in it. That's really a surprise, and it's precisely because this is the debut of Marvel's Phase 4 villain, if Kevin Feige can be believed. Now, if you've seen the whole show, you may be both wondering how it's possible based on what happens, but then he actually does explain what happens to him or what is going to happen after what happens to him, and that will be explained later on in this podcast, too.
He Who Remains.
She's still calling me that.
He Who Remains invites them to his office, and he seems very nonchalant. Loki and Sylvie are both on guard, swords drawn, waiting for him to do something. Loki is surprised he's just a man. Kang says he hopes they're not disappointed, but Sylvie makes a move saying he's just easier to kill. She swings, and he teleports behind her onto the couch. When she turns to him, laughing on the couch, he teleports behind her and blows in her ear. She turns again to strike, but he teleports away. The Lokis are confused, and now that we see them awaiting their fate in the elevator, we get a better look at the relief on the back wall of the elevator, and now you can see that hourglass motif that we've seen before on the outside of the TVA elevators. It's here inside now. The floor is reached, and the door opens to reveal Kang, not worried, welcoming them to his office. There's a large fireplace, windows overlooking the cosmos behind a small desk with a couple of chairs in front of it, bookcases lining the walls. It feels very Final Boss level in gaming terms. Kang pours tea or maybe coffee, tells them to take a seat. And he seems a little annoyed that they don't quickly take their seats and have their weapons out, or at least that's how Majors plays it.
I said I wasn't to be disturbed.
Well, you're not going to be happy to see me.
Back at the TVA, Mobius enters Ravonna's office, and she doesn't seem all that shocked to see him, telling him if anyone was going to make it back, it would be him. I'm still not sure why she is the way she is, though. Even after seeing the end of the episode, but she sees him with the pruning baton, asks if he's going to prune her. He says he's got higher standards with close personal friends. She apologizes and basically says, you know, the ends justify the means, basically, but she says the mission was too important. He brings up, they're all variants, and the timekeepers are fake. She says, it can't be all for nothing, and that's why she pruned him. She calls Hunter D90 to her office, but Mobius isn't worried. He pulls out the pen from FDR High School, and we get to see B-15 evading a pruning squad through the school in 2018 Fremont, Ohio. That's where the chase ends, in the principal's office. It's the office of Rebecca Tourmenet, a graduate of the Ohio State University, and that, according to a search of the Marvel Wiki, happens to be an alias of Ravonna's from the comics. And sure enough, the hunter chasing down B-15 addresses the principal that enters the room as Judge Renslayer, only to be met with confusion from that variant. She is indeed a variant, and this, oddly enough, could be where she was first pulled from the timelines, because now she sees the TVA, and that seems to be how they work. They pull people from all different timelines. Hunter B-15 seems to have been freed by Mobius, and she wants to start revealing the truth to as many Minutemen and Hunters as she can, And then the scene shifts back to the Citadel.
You're a flea on the back of a dragon. In for one hell of a ride.
Kang is congratulating the Lokis on making it to the end. Classic villain stuff. Loki tells him he's lost. They found him. He replies, duh, of course you did. And Sylvie seems to take exception and lunges at him. Again, he teleports away as she swings and misses. He takes a file from below the desk, opens it up, pulls out two script pages and shows it to them. He can't be killed yet because he already knows what's going to happen. He proves it by having exactly what's been said written down on the page as he gives it to them. And Loki is L1130 and Sylvie is L1190 and Kang is listed simply as me. How has he been able to avoid him? He preloaded his temp pad with everything he needs to stay alive because he knows it all. He's seen it all. They think they beat him and that's why they're there at the end, but he says he paved the road and they walked down it. And I'm going to give Majors a pass. There's a lot of overacting in these scenes, but I think it's because he's supposed to be odd and quirky. You know, most likely it's solitary confinement for him. He may have had to relive moments so many times it's made him a little bit crazy. And he's also suffering from all that knowledge. He says it's all going to happen, and he has all the proof and puts more pages out on the table. Sylvie's reasoning that there's no reason for them to be there, but Kang says you can't get to the end until you've been changed by the journey, and that everything needs to happen so they can finish the quest. Loki says it's all a game to you then. It's manipulation. Kang calls him out on that and then whispers aloud to Sylvie if she thinks she can trust him or anyone at all.
I think people are ready to hear a little truth now.
Quid est veritas, Mobius? Quid est veritas? What is truth? Ravonna and Mobius continue their arguments for and against the ends justifying the means. Renslayer's for order. Mobius, not necessarily for chaos, but definitely for free will and has seen the void. So he sees the cost to what he views as the innocent. He laments how she claimed they were friends, then ordered him pruned and says she betrayed him. She seems to think the stronger argument is that he betrayed her, having a crisis of faith and then turning to the variants after she risked her neck for him. I don't see how that's possible at all. We didn't see any repercussions for her at any point for his failures. Based on that alone, I'd say her claim rings hollow. She pulls up a time door and Mobius questions her, says she's got to do what needs to be done, which seems to be traveling wherever Kang needs her to travel, maybe to the 31st century to drop off some knowledge. Mobius tries to get her to stay and help him build the TVA into something better together. She refuses and he charges the baton. She warns him that he is of no danger to her and he says, let's see. He lunges at her. She easily takes the baton from him and knocks him down. He tells her to go ahead, and she turns off the baton, grabs her things, and heads toward the portal. He asks her a Quo Vadis, basically.
Where are you going to go?
In search of free will.
Maybe there's a little foreshadowing with this battle, and then the one that happens between Loki and Sylvie later on. Kang looks more comfortable. He says he understands the moral objections to the TVA and that his methods are deceptive, but without him, the TVA, everything burns. When Loki asks what he's afraid of, Kang pauses a long while and then says, me. On the one hand, he just told us his methods are deceptive and could be giving away his secret, counting on it being unbelievable. On the other hand, he may just actually be leaving everything to fate and the combined Loki's free will. Sylvie asks who he is, and he says he's had many names, and one of them is Conqueror, as if we needed any additional hint that he's Kang. He goes behind his desk, touches his watch, then flicks some molten-looking metal onto his desk, and as he tells the story, the metal forms different shapes, representing what he's explaining. This is kind of like the Miss Minutes intro in Season 1, Episode 1, where she goes through the formation of the TVA, except what we're supposed to understand is that Kang is telling us the real story now. He starts out, eons ago, before the TVA, a variant of myself. He doesn't say I lived on Earth. He says a variant. He doesn't say human either. He was a scientist. Now, it could be he's just quirky, likes to refer to himself in the third person. It also might be that he's not the version he speaks of, or even a living being. Remember, there was something that you must pass through in the TVA to prove that you're a living creature? Kang continues, saying the scientists discovered that universes were stacked on top of each other, and that other versions were figuring out the same thing at the same time. He says, they made contact, and for a while, there was peace.
Narcissistic, self-congratulatory peace.
They shared technology, knowledge, and used the best of their universes to improve the others. Except, if you look at the image represented on his desk, the figures are holding the gold reset charges and TEM pads, and it looks a lot like a TVA monitor. So the sharing of technology and knowledge seems to be like the creation of the TVA. He pauses to take a bite of an apple at that moment, right before he says, not every version of himself was so pure of heart. New worlds meant only one thing, new lands to be conquered. The desk figure morphs to show yet another variant Kang holding a charged pruning baton and looking at a floating earth. All out war exploded, he said, and the figures morph into a battle scene that seemed to me to evoke the Dora Milaje. Now I'm wondering, he says 31st century Earth. Maybe he just left out the word Wakanda. And maybe Kang in the Marvel Studios multiverse could be descended from a line of Black Panthers. He says the fighting was almost the end to everyone and everything. Sylvie interrupts with a line about how the timekeepers are stepping in to save everyone. And then Kang does this weird... And then says, no, that's the dogma of the TVA. But what actually happened was the first scientist discovered Eliath, a creature created from all the tears in reality. Really? Created from the tears? This is likely a lie, I think. He very well may have discovered Eliath, but I doubt he knows how it was created. And I further doubt when he says that the scientist harnessed the beast's power and started experimenting, and then he weaponized it, and he ended the multiversal war. He gets angry when he goes from third person to first person in that speech. I think that's an indication that this is a lie. I think he set up the TVA to keep feeding Eliath, to keep it satiated, and he's trapped there by it or in this timeline. Eliath destroyed the world, or is destined to at the end of time, and he's going through time over and over to figure out how to defeat it. That could be. He says once he isolated our time, all he had to do was manage it and prevent branches. Hence the TVA, and hence the timekeepers, and hence the bureaucracy. It's as if he's being imprisoned, and he needs someone to unlock the door, right? If that's the case, everything he's telling Loki and Sylvie is an effort to get him specifically unlocked from that timeline that has him looping over and over and over and over again. It's kind of like a torture chamber, or kind of like what Doctor Strange threatened to Dormammu, remember? We could do this over and over again until the end of time. He says his actions provided ages and ages of cosmic harmony, so you're welcome.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
He then disintegrates the desk figure and it disappears like it was pruned, but all he does is touch his watch, you know, like the TEMPAD watch. Then he says, you came to kill the devil, but he keeps them safe. And if they think he's evil, wait until they meet his variants. He does seem sincere about that part of his story, but he's still crazy, right? Then he says, that's the gambit. So he's taking a risk to gain an advantage. He's offering up to them that he's risking something here and leaving things up to chance in order for him to get some kind of advantage, like a pawn sacrifice in a game of chess. And something like this, it might be an unfair fight even for someone like Tony Stark or Doctor Strange or Bruce Banner, but definitely the Lokis are outmatched here. Which will they choose, stifling order or cataclysmic chaos? If you just depose the dictator, who fills the void? Just last episode, Loki was bragging to Kid Loki and Classic Loki and Alligator Loki and even Boastful Loki about how Sylvie was different. She didn't want to just rule. She just wanted to overthrow the TVA. Chaos is her choice. And it seemed like he was in on that. King says he's lived a million lifetimes, and this is the only way. And that seemed to be a callback to Doctor Strange, you know, finding only one path to beating Thanos and telling Tony Stark one way. Sylvie calls Kang a liar. He admits that could be the case. Loki is having trouble. The journey has changed him. He's thinking out loud about Kang continuing to prune innocent timelines. So Kang stirs the pot, says Loki and Sylvie would do it. He offers to put them in charge. He again brings up it's either kill him and introduce millions of versions of himself, or they take over and run the TVA, continuing the work it does. Loki thinks he's lying. Why would he give up all that power? Kang says, buddy, I'm tired, and that he's old, much older than he looks, and it's a young, hungry person's game. He says it turns out the perfect person to take over was two. There's some dialogue that was dubbed in either to preserve the secret of the ending, or maybe it was just to fix a mistake or clarify the stance. It starts with Kang saying no more lies, which I thought was funny since, you know, the dubbing would make me think otherwise. But he reiterates, they kill him, starting a multiversal war, or return to the TVA as benevolent rulers telling the variant workers why they are there and why they do what they do. Sylvie isn't having it. Kang responds saying it wasn't personal, it was practical. Well, it was personal to Sylvie. She spent her life on the run after being taken from a happy home. Kang tells Sylvie to grow up, points out the hard truths. She's a murderer, a hypocrite. He says they're all villains here. And, you know, to a certain degree, he's not wrong.
We've all done horrible, terrible, horrific things. But now, you have a chance to do them for a good reason.
The camera then pushes in slowly with some eerie music taking almost 25 seconds on a single shot with no dialogue, just some emoting by Majors before his next line.
We just crossed the threshold.
Apparently, he no longer knows what's going to happen. He admits to a lie, saying before he said he knows how everything will turn out, but apparently he's now reached a point where for millions of lifetimes, things now divert, and he can't be sure how they'll act. Briefly, we see outside the Citadel, and the timeline does appear to be branching. Loki wonders aloud if this is it. The choice is that simple. It's left to them. It's as if two people broke into a house and the owner threatens to shoot him, but then offers to put his gun and walk away. Did the owner realize he didn't have bullets? Why bluff so poorly if it's not part of the plan? Why repeat over and over again, don't kill me, it'll unleash chaos, if you're talking to Lokis who pretty much embody chaos? Perhaps this is what Loki's starting to realize. Kang again states, they can either take over or kill him, unleashing millions of variants, but he adds a new wrinkle. Now, he says, he'll just end up right where he is again if they do so due to reincarnation. It's really as if that's the choice he wants them to make. They're not falling for it, so he keeps one-upping it to make it more appealing as a choice. Sylvie says it's lies and manipulation, which it does appear to be. Kang denies it. He takes off his 10-pad watch, pushes it toward the front of his desk. He wants one of them to seize the power. He just sits there, drawing attention to it. The apple sits half-eaten on the desk, and I wonder if apples have something to do with time, since it called to mind for me the apple in Doctor Strange when he used the time stone on it. Well, Kang is just waiting. Until Sylvie lunges after him, and Loki stops her. She turns on him. He wants to think about it. It's confusing. Loki, a master liar, knows something's up. He hasn't had time to figure it out. Sylvie, so close to her goal, she just wants to kill him, end her suffering. So she heads for Kang again. Loki uses magic to pull her back. He doesn't understand how she doesn't understand that they need to move carefully. She just thinks he's a liar, and he thinks he's as crazy and a liar, but maybe he's not lying about the power vacuum, introducing something worse. Sylvie accuses Loki of wanting the throne. He tries reassuring her, but she thinks it's just a con. She wonders why they're not seeing things the same way.
Because you can't trust. And I can't be trusted.
A battle ensues. Sylvie attacking Loki, using magic to get to Kang. Loki using magic to defend himself and protect Kang. At one point, Loki points out the cost of making a wrong decision, that it's too great to rush into it. She goads him to kill her and take his throne. He refuses. She kicks him out of the way, fires magic at him to keep him away, then swings at Kang in its slow motion. I was wondering what's going to happen when the scene shifts and in real time, Loki appears right in front of her. How she didn't cut him, I can't figure it out. He throws down his blade, and at this point, I thought this was maybe a duplication projection. You know, I thought that was going to be a callback for us. Loki keeps saying, stop. That brought back memories of WandaVision and the repetition of stop it to me. Stop does, you know, happen to be a command that has to do with time after all. Sylvie seems to be listening. Loki tries to tell her he understands how she feels. All he knows is he doesn't want to hurt her or have a throne. He just wants her to be okay. She drops her sword, kisses him, and they turn, and it seems like love is going to conquer all.
But I'm not you.
When she kissed him, they turn, she'd reached the desk, grabbed the watch tempad, pushes him through a time door, she opens into the TVA. Before he can reach the door, it closes on him. Sylvie wants to finish the job. She summons her sword that she let clang to the ground moments before her kiss. She sweeps the desk out of her way with the magic. Kang looks excited. She still doesn't pick up that this might be what he wants. She wonders why he isn't begging for his life. She stabs him. He chuckles, and his final words, I'll see you soon. She sits on the floor, and the camera takes us out the window behind the desk as the timeline is branching, and it seems to crystallize and crack. Mobius and B-15 are in the TVA HQ looking at a redlined timeline, and Mobius points out there's no going back, but B-15 is fine with that. He says, for all time, she responds, always. Loki is in the TVA room that Sylvie pushed him into. The camera pushes in. He's in grief, and we see on his face it slowly turns into a sort of anger or maybe determination. He rushes out into the halls. The workers seem to be rushing around, but it's not really panic. Nothing seems to be crumbling to the ground. Loki finds himself in the archives, and though the letters for floors seem to be different, that could easily be because he's just on a different floor, especially since TSY does appear in some old credit sequences, and it appears as a floor number at the end in this episode. The real gut punch, though, comes when Loki sees people he recognizes. Mobius and B-15 are in the archives talking about 63 new branches opening up in just one unit. B-15 asks if he wants them to just let them all branch. Mobius wonders how they could even stop it. Loki shouts, they can't. He admits to them that they made a terrible mistake. He and Sylvie freeing the timeline, that they found him beyond the storm in a citadel at the end of time. He says he is terrifying and planned everything and has seen everything, knows everything, and someone's coming. Countless different versions of a very dangerous person all set on war, and they need to prepare. It occurs to me that in this role, Loki is now doing what Bruce Banner did in Infinity War. He's the Herald here. Unfortunately, Mobius and B-15 don't recognize him. Not as in, I haven't seen him in a while. Mobius asks if he's an analyst and what division he's from. Loki is confused. And then we get our Planet of the Apes style ending where he sees the giant statues in front of the main elevator are no longer a bunch of statues of lizards. It's one statue. It's Kang.
What division are you from?
What are you talking about?
Who are you? What's your name?
Boots on the ground now, archives.
Who are you?
The mid-credits sequence was a stamped file of Loki Laufeyson, revealing he will return in season 2. And I do hope that means that Loki Laufey's daughter will also return. Tom and Sophia were fun to watch, even if it didn't turn out the way that I thought it might. I'll tell you the truth, I really liked my prediction, and I was proud of it. And I thought, based on the information at hand, I nailed it. I just assumed Jonathan Majors was telling the truth back in June when he said he was absolutely not involved in Loki at all, or actually he said, I don't know what you're talking about. when he was asked if he would appear in Loki. It was just reported that way, but apparently that meant no one else followed up, and it kept getting reported that he said he wasn't in the show. I felt like the breadcrumbs were there, but having felt burned by the more straightforward finish to WandaVision, I felt like going with what we knew in Loki was safer than introducing a new character at the end. I can't believe that Loki will be required viewing for anyone really wanting to see the beginnings of a character that's seemingly going to be at the forefront for many movies to come. Actually, I can't think of any movie now that can leave Kang out of it and be taken seriously by me. He's the one in control of time. If he's not in every end credit scene from here on out, I mean, it might be fun to watch, but it doesn't really matter, right? I mean, what are they going to say? That little time pad or temp pad was from a different reality, and that when Sylvie used it, she sent him into an alternate reality, and every reality has its own version of the TVA, and so he was just playing them and wanted to get one of them to use it and go to a different timeline so that he could be safe in that time? I don't know. Nothing matters. Except the person in charge of all time who has the power to remove obstacles to his power from anywhere and any time that has ever happened. Someone gets close to him, just prune it with your team and place it into immediate temporal danger thanks to his pet, Eliath. This also means Loki's now the most important character in Marvel Phase 4. If he can't affect change inside the TVA, if he can't find a way back to Sylvie, then he's never been important. So because we know he is important, he is the most important. That means, thanks to that marvelous reveal in the mid-credits sequence, we know we're going to get to see more of Tom Hiddleston and the quest inside the TVA in Season 2. Although, the news is so new right now, we don't know when it will go into production or air. With Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania years away, and many other titles coming in between, we could get several seasons of Loki, if we're lucky. Well, what do you think? Email us at thisisthewayphase4@gmail.com or interact on Twitter @thewayphase4 or on facebook.com/thewayphase4. That's all for this show, but what's next? Well, What If is next. If you haven't heard, What If is an animated show coming to Disney Plus that explores alternate realities. Like, what if Yondu took Chala instead of Peter Quill and Chala played the Star-Lord role? What if Peggy Carter got the superhero serum instead of Steve Rogers and became Captain Carter? What if Killmonger saved Tony Stark and he never became the Iron Man? I still haven't made a decision on whether it will be an episode-by-episode discussion or one recap of the entire series when it starts in mid-August the 11th, which is a Wednesday, like Loki. If I had to guess, it would be the latter, since at this point, it appears that none of the stories, as interesting and thought-provoking as they may be, are going to have any impact on the future of Phase 4. I very much enjoyed the ride of this show, and I applaud Marvel Studios for doing what I thought they wouldn't, which is to make this show matter. The writing was great, and rather than try and answer everything, they just answered just enough to make it satisfying, although I think we all wanted to see Owen Wilson end up on a jet ski. Am I right? This has been This Is The Way Phase 4's discussion of For All Time, Always, the Season 1 finale of Loki, and boy, we are looking forward to Season 2. I'm Steve Lascalzo. Until next time, friends.